Today, Alaska becomes the 30th state to accept the benefits of Medicaid expansion.
Governor Bill Walker announces he'll expand Medicaid. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Thursday, July 16th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, an Army doctor that treats soldiers and jumps out of planes with them.
When I first got here, I was like, why are these guys always getting themselves injured? And now, I mean, you know, I've had my first airborne concussion.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by Crowley, providing marine petroleum distribution and energy support services throughout Alaska since 1953, supporting business development while helping safeguard the environment. More at CrowleyAlaska.com. And by Wells Fargo, proud supporter of APRN and dedicated to helping people reach their goals on and off the field. Wells Fargo, together we'll go far.
After promising to expand the state's Medicaid program on the campaign trail, Governor Bill Walker has announced he will sidestep the legislature to make that happen.
Today, Alaska becomes the 30th state to accept the benefits of Medicaid expansion.
Medicaid expansion has been blocked by key Republican leaders, but as APRN contributor Alexandra Gutierrez reports, the legislature is expected to let the decision stand, even if some don't like it.
The Thursday announcement felt more like a victory rally than a press conference.
I think today deserves a high five, Governor.
Said Corrections Commissioner Ron Taylor in front of a standing room only crowd before proceeding to then high five the governor. At least 200 people had gathered at the Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium office for the event, and the only place where you could find an empty chair was at a reserved table that had more seats than Anchorage has media outlets. Standing in front of his whole cabinet, Walker said he wasn't going to wait any longer for the legislature to act on Medicaid expansion. His administration had pushed hard for the policy during the regular session and attempted to get the legislature to take it up during their first special session, only to see them gavel out and gavel back in with the item removed. Walker said lawmakers had their chance.
This is the final option for me. I've tried everything else. And one thing people have to learn about me, I never give up.
Walker explained that the state would accept nearly $150 million in federal funding so that more people who are near the poverty line can enroll in the state's Medicaid program. These are people who are too poor to be eligible for subsidies under the Affordable Care Act, but not covered in other ways. His health commissioner, Valerie Davidson, said the decision would have a major impact on about 20,000 Alaskans.
We have so many hardworking Alaskans who simply don't have access to health care. They are missing work. It is affecting businesses. They can't take care of their children. They can't hunt. They can't fish. They can't chop wood. And they can't pack water. And they can't report to work when they're not healthy enough to do so.
Expanding Medicaid isn't as simple as just telling the federal government Alaska wants the money. The governor does need to consult lawmakers, but the process is more a formality than anything else. What happens now is that Walker makes an ask of the Legislative Budget and Audit Committee to consider the appropriation request. They then have 45 days to make a non-binding recommendation on it. Anchorage Republican Mike Hawker is the chair of that committee.
I personally support Medicaid expansion, but if I wanted to stop it in this committee, there is nothing I can do.
In fact, Hawker says he's even open to expediting the process if the governor wants the funds to be accepted before September 1st. But even though he supports the policy and is willing to work with the governor on it, Hawker says circumventing the legislature will bother some.
I'm not sure that the governor's unilateral decision to undertake expansion is, at the end of the day, the best way to go about this.
North Pole Republican John Coghill is the Senate's majority leader and an opponent of expansion. He does not think it's fiscally responsible to take money for the program when the federal government is running up a deficit. Coghill agrees that it will affect the governor's relationship with the legislature.
So it'll put us on guard. There's no doubt about that. But I don't know that we'll start playing payback or anything like that. I think it's just that it gives us a little more understanding of how he's going to, make policy calls. And that makes it tougher when he has to come to us and ask for budget items.
But even though Coghill does not like the policy, he doesn't expect that the legislature will take drastic measures to block it. The only real way to stop the governor is to call a third special session this year. And Coghill says there isn't enough opposition to the policy for that to happen, especially since the Republican majorities are themselves divided on it.
There probably is support enough for the Medicaid expansion. Have taken both houses together, probably get a majority of people.
For his part, Walker says that while it is the legislature's call, a special session to block Medicaid expansion probably would not be productive. And based on the number of high fives and hugs the governor gave at the press conference, he's not expecting them to try. In Anchorage, I'm Alexander Gutierrez.
The North Slope Borough Assembly has voted to investigate allegations of ethics violations made against Mayor Charlotte Brower. The Assembly's unanimous vote on Monday was made at Brower's request and comes after a disclosure by Brower that borough staff had procured goods from members of her family. Brower wrote in a July 7th memo to Assembly members that the borough had allowed no bid purchases from her family without her knowledge. Details of the purchases the borough paid for were not immediately known. Brower was not available for comment. In a written statement released, Brower said she thought an investigation into the allegations would promote transparency and accountability within the borough. Last week, the Army announced it'll be removing more than 2,600 positions from the 4th Brigade Combat Team's 25th Infantry Division stationed at Joint Base Elmendorf-Richardson. It's part of the military's nationwide force reduction. Amid the cuts, the rarely mentioned role of military medicine is also changing. KSKA's Zachariah Hughes spoke to one doctor nicknamed the Dirt Bike Dermatologist.
By Army standards, Major Kim Edgard is kind of a weird egg.
For breakfast this morning, I had some sort of jalapeno meat thing out of an MRE in the dark.
We spoke in what I think was the shower room of a wooden outbuilding near a military training ground in Northeast Australia. Edgard is a ranking officer on a multinational training operation here, 2 hours by dirt road from Shoalwater Bay. Though he's built sturdily enough to fill out his fatigues, his careful demeanor and bright green eyes mark him a little bit apart. Edgard came to the Army by way of medicine.
I trained as a dermatologist at UNC Chapel Hill, and then I trained in immunodermatology at Duke.
Edgard spent his formative years in southern Alabama. He signed up for the military after 9/11, in part to help pay for medical school. After deploying to Afghanistan in 2011, he did a stint at Walter Reed before getting attached to the 425th Airborne Brigade at J-Bear.
Now I jump out of airplanes and do combat medicine in Australia, I guess.
Doctors are scarce in the Army and often inhabit a different world than the soldiers they repair. But like every other airborne soldier on the mission, Edgard jumped out of a low-flying cargo plane after 19 hours in transit from Anchorage.
And by the time I figured out where I was, here it was, 10:30 in the morning in Australia.
And that's when he got to work, checking soldiers for broken bones and concussions from the jump.
Nobody was really moving like I wanted them to, so there was some guys riding around on dirt bikes. And I just asked to borrow one of their bikes and kind of ran around and saw a bunch of patients and get the guys off the field as quickly as possible and back here to where the Australians had set up a sort of field hospital.
This is a far cry from Edgard's trained specialty, immunodermatology, basically skin diseases.
In the clinic, there's plenty of people with rashes and moles and hair loss problems, whatever. My brigade they kind of understand that I'm a little bit of a special flower, so they let me go back to Walter Reed and read biopsies every few months.
Since World War II, airborne units have been marked by their machismo, one part bravery and another part reckless abandon, with reputations for ego and hard drinking. I mean, these are the guys that jump out of airplanes and into war zones. Not exactly the characteristics that come to mind when you think about your dermatologist.
Yeah, they were a little worried when I showed up, and they told me this later. When they heard that I was some super specialist, they said, "We thought you were going to have inch-thick glasses and be like 110 pounds.
Partly from self-consciousness and partly from intrigue, Edgard leapt in with both feet, literally. It gave him credibility, along with firsthand knowledge about the injuries he's always treating.
Because when I first got here, I was like, why are these guys always getting themselves injured? And now, I mean, you know, I've had my first airborne concussion and, you know, a few other injuries myself.
Edgard is new to parachuting, but at 35, he feels the damage it does to knees, hips, and the back, especially for guys that have been doing it for years. Even as we're talking, evidence of the physical toll makes itself known.
Deployment. Excuse me, I knocked a tooth out a couple weeks back, so that's a fake tooth there.
Which one?
That one. So it's getting replaced. I'll be a bionic dermatologist.
You're like a step closer to dentures.
Actually, I guess it's in my ruck. I have some of that denture paste that I glue it back in my mouth with. Anyhow, so my buddy was in Afghanistan and he...
The military does not have enough doctors, and that's why a skin specialist ends up doing combat medicine. As the Army contracts in its current drawdown, it's trying to figure out how to do more with less.
Doctors, they cost a lot, so there's some push to sort of reduce the medical force as well.
But there are personality differences, too. After years of grueling post-grad study, not many doctors clamor to go through boot camp. The Army has incentive programs, but Edgard thinks the organization might have more luck if they refine the profile of who they're after.
Like, more soldiers than scientists is kind of... And those people do exist, but they see the Army as like super regimented, or, you know, they don't want to wear the uniform. But I mean, I think that, you know, if they saw what I did on a Wednesday, like I said, I'm getting paid the same as my dermatologist friends back at Walter Reed, and I'm skydiving into Australia and camping out.
As a C-130 transport plane hummed to the ground nearby, Edgard tossed in one last thing, almost an afterthought.
I don't know, man. I've got one life to live, and it's make the most out of it. Get in there, sleep on the ground with the guys. You know, I say special flower, but at the end of the day, I mean, just another soldier who probably has a little bit more school than some guys, but it's just the way to do it. Make it work. Make it fun.
And with that, the dirt bike dermatologist hustles out to pack his bag and catch a plane. Reporting in Shoalwater Bay, Australia, I'm Zachariah Hughes.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, working to raise the coolness factor of canned salmon.
Canned salmon needs to be positioned with blueberries, literally as a superfood.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Arctic Wire Rope and Supply, an Alaskan company providing lifting and rigging products since 1983, on the web at arcticwirerope.com. And by Alaska Pipeline Service Company, committed to safety, operating the 800-mile Trans-Alaska Pipeline since 1977.
A 23-year-old Alaska-based soldier passed away this week while on leave out of the state. Specialist Norman Thiel, junior of the Army's 1st Striker Brigade at Fort Wainwright near Fairbanks, was visiting family in Florida during his leave. He was found dead Tuesday. The case is being investigated as an accidental overdose, although the Lake County Sheriff's Department has not said which substances may have played a role. Army officials declined to comment on whether Thiel had undergone counseling or treatment while serving in Alaska the last 2 years, citing privacy considerations. This is the second death of a soldier based at Fort Wainwright in less than a week. The Anchorage police are investigating an overnight spike in homeless deaths.
Well, over the last 12 hours, APD did respond to three outdoor deaths. All of the individuals are male. They all appear to be homeless.
That's APD spokeswoman Anita Schell. She says mental health and substance abuse issues are suspected to have contributed to at least one death. But officials will wait for autopsy reports to come back before making a final ruling. Police are not investigating any connections. Schell says the cases happened in different parts of town, two of them at separate camps near park trails.
The third one was found this morning at about 6:30 in the morning down by 3rd Avenue and Carlock Street. He was found deceased in that area next to a chain link fence. And so we don't have any indications at this time that they are linked or related in any way.
Schell says while it's unusual for three people to pass away outdoors in such a short amount of time, officials handle as many as six death notifications in any given day.
The Anchorage Police Department services, you know, a very large area. So, unfortunately, we have to respond to deaths on a daily basis. And so it may appear that this is a large number, but what you don't see is all of the other death notifications that the police department does have to make on a daily basis.
Police have identified the decedents as Destry Murphy of Indiana and 34-year-old Harry O. Oxarock, Jr. of Anchorage, but are waiting until next of kin have been notified before releasing information on the third man. Despite new ways of marketing and selling salmon, canned fish remains a major product from Alaska's fisheries. In 2013, 38% of the salmon coming out of Bristol Bay was put into cans. KDLG's Molly Dishner has more about the effort to get younger Americans more excited about canned Alaska fish.
LA marketer Craig Carroll is working with the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute to change that.
I think that canned salmon needs to be positioned with blueberries, literally as a superfood.
He's not the only one who wants to see a resurgence in canned salmon.
It brings tears to my eyes because it's an old business, but it's such a staple business. And people need to eat more canned salmon.
That was Eric Weiss, who sells tin to canneries throughout Alaska, including some in Naknek. His company, Crown Cork and Seal, has worked on developing new, smaller cans that he thinks are more appealing to consumers.
We've actually introduced a new, smaller size to the industry, and it's about the size, the height of a quarter-pound can, and then the diameter of a half-pound can.
But Weiss says there are challenges in getting that new can sold, from inefficiencies for the processors who have to fill more, smaller cans, to convincing stores to carry them. That could be solved if more people were asking for cans. Carroll is trying to increase demand. His target audience? Millennial women, particularly pregnant women and new moms who might be interested in the health benefits of a can of fish and also appreciate the sustainability of Alaska's fisheries. Carroll's wife is an integral part of that effort.
My wife has been developing these amazing salmon burgers with a caper lemon sauce that she mixes up. And the big test for us is, will our 6-year-old son eat it? My 6-year-old is pretty picky, and he really digs these salmon burgers.
Carroll hopes that a website with 30 or so recipes tested by his wife will hit home with the mommy bloggers who can spur purchases and eventually help salmon capture a little of the tuna market.
It's really changing people's perception about them and driving the consumer into the shop and forcing the shop to say, hey, you know, we got to move this off the bottom shelf and put it, you know, like 4 feet high so people can see it.
In Dillingham, I'm Molly Dishner.
Hundreds waited in line this morning for global fashion retailer H&M to open its new store in Anchorage. Even as the state feels the squeeze of low oil prices, Alaskan shoppers are still keen to lay down their dollars on national brands. KSKA's Monica Goki has more.
If you were at the Diamond Center today, you only had to follow the sound of techno music to find H&M. Hundreds of people were lined up outside the store for its Anchorage debut. There was screaming, there was flash mob dancing, there were free giveaways of things like selfie sticks and gaudy sunglasses, and a few lucky ones got H&M gift cards. Dee Dee Harris was in the line for about 2 hours before the store opening. She moved to Alaska from California. The shopping here, she says, is lackluster.
I really wish they had a Macy's and a Victoria's Secret, and you know, I can't think of everything right now, but really a Macy's. That's like my favorite store.
But Harris says she's actually pumped for H&M. It wasn't one of her standbys in California, but she's excited to give it a try. H&M is one of several national brands opening doors in Anchorage this year. Bath & Body Works opened at the Fifth Avenue Mall earlier this summer, and Nordstrom Rack is scheduled to open later in the fall. Last year, Cabela's, Bass Pro, and a number of national restaurant brands came to Anchorage. Overall, Anchorage lost jobs last year, but jobs in the retail sector grew 3.5%, and that was the largest growth of any employment sector, according to a state labor report. For Diamond Center owner Hugh Ashlock, today's H&M opening was the culmination of a 3-year courtship with the Swedish fashion giant.
We were able to give them a 2-story fascia on a major street and give them the brand image that they want.
that brand image H&M wanted, Ashlock says, had about a $9 million price tag, which was split between the retailer and the Diamond Center.
So H&M always wants a flagship in every market, and they want to do what they call their full brand expression, which in H&M's case is a very modern, white, clean, two-story fascia with a lot of glass. And so we were able to do renderings to show them. We researched their best looking stores, and then I did a rendering showing them on that corner, and that really sold them on, here's what you can have at Diamond Center.
The process Ashlock just described, doing the store renderings and showing H&M that they could, in fact, have a sexy looking store in Alaska, that is not really the norm. Malls in the lower 48 don't usually have to woo retailers to that extent.
You know, sometimes selling Alaska is a more difficult proposition than selling Diamond Center. But once they're up here, they do really well.
With falling oil prices and fiscal belt tightening in other areas of the city's economy, retail growth is forecasted to slow down this year. But hundreds of fashion-hungry shoppers lining up outside H&M shows us that Alaskans are, indeed, hungry for national brands. In Anchorage, I'm Monica Goki with Casey Ellingson.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by the Red Dog Mine, committed to environmental excellence. Alaska Pacific University offers an affordable education, small class sizes, and life-friendly schedules designed to support your personal and professional goals. APU is still accepting applications for fall 2015. Find out about financial aid and the promised tuition grant and apply online at alaskapacific.edu before Saturday, August 1st. This message sponsored by Alaska Pacific University.
Representative Bob Herron, a Democrat from Bethel, was elected the chairman of the Arctic Caucus during the 25th Summer Summit of the Pacific Northwest Economic Region, or PENWAR. The organization gathered in Big Sky, Montana this week. PENWAR is a partnership comprised of industry and five U.S. states, three Canadian provinces, and the Yukon and Northwest Territories. As chairman, Herron will help educate policymakers in Washington, D.C. and Ottawa on Arctic issues. David Ramsey is the Minister of Justice and Industry for the Northwest Territories and the current president of PENWAR. He says the Arctic Caucus is an important body for raising the economic profile of the North.
Market access, infrastructure, energy costs, especially in rural and remote communities. The Northwest Territories is no different and faces similar challenges as Alaska. So we're going to continue to work on ways to try to find investment into the Arctic, and that includes Alaska, the NWT, and the Yukon.
Ramsey says their November meeting in Yellowknife will focus on the needs of the Arctic as development ramps up. The PENWAR meetings wrapped up today. Juneau police have a new tool to sniff out a steady flow of heroin and other narcotics entering the city. It's been about 25 years since the department had a canine on staff. KTOO's Elizabeth Jenkins has more on the four-legged officer.
The Juneau Police Department's newest recruit is a young gun, just 18 months old and 63 pounds. He's a German Shepherd named Buddy. He's an intensely devoted officer, but he's also still a puppy. And waving around a shotgun microphone kind of looks like a chew toy.
Buddy, hey, Buddy. Sorry.
That's okay.
Okay, come on, Buddy.
His partner, Officer Mike Wise, is training Buddy at Zontiki Heaney Middle School to sniff out drugs on campus. Inside a classroom, Wyatt snaps on blue plastic gloves while Buddy waits in the car.
So basically right now is I have some narcotics on me that I'm going to be planting, and so I'm getting them basically ready to hide.
Wyatt unscrews the lid of a mason jar and pulls out 4 grams of black, tacky-looking heroin.
We're going to put it in the stash box, and then we're going to put it inside the filing cabinet.
The police department received nearly $25,000 in grant money from the feds to bring the canine on staff. Buddy was Russian-born and snapped up by a recruiting agency that finds dogs with a high drive for law enforcement. Officer Wise had to fly down to Alabama to pick Buddy up, then named Batty. He remembers walking in a kennel with 30 dogs barking. The handler pointed to a German Shepherd and handed him a collar.
And I didn't know who this dog was. I've never met him before. He's never seen me. And for a stranger just to walk into his kennel was kind of terrifying.
But Buddy just looked at him and wagged his tail.
There was a huge relief to know that this dog is not going to try to eat me right now. The first day, Buddy just took off. He wanted to walk away and just keep pulling me everywhere.
Slowly, Wise started to bond with his new partner. He brushed Buddy's fur, played with him, and did some additional training in Alabama before bringing him back home to his wife and two kids.
And from then on, it's been inseparable. We just stay together.
Buddy is trained to smell heroin, meth, and cocaine. But not marijuana, since that's legal now in Alaska. His nose is so good, he can detect each note in the narcotics. For example, you might walk into a room and smell a delicious pizza.
He smells every little ingredient that's involved in making that pizza, and that's how he does it with the methamphetamines, the cocaine, or the heroin. He smells the ingredients on each one and knows.
The police department is going to need the help. Last year, they confiscated over $4.6 million worth of heroin in Juneau. There's a big incentive for smugglers. A dose here is worth five times more than down south.
Heroin gets to Juneau in a number of ways.
Lieutenant Chris Sell oversees investigations.
The people who are importing heroin move regularly between the U.S. mail, other mail delivery services like FedEx or UPS, and bring it in on the airlines or on the ferry.
Last year's seizures were made up of a couple of big busts and several small ones. A drug conspiracy involving stolen Costco jewelry yielded 10,000 street doses of heroin.
In Juneau, we've had such a heroin problem. I think you'd be hard-pressed to find an adult who doesn't know a family who's been impacted in some way by the addiction.
Sell says there hasn't been a sudden spike in heroin. It's more like a steady march. And finding it once it's here can be difficult.
People have done things like taped drugs to the underside of the baby's dresser in the baby's room. And Buddy will help us ferret out things like that.
Wise holds tight to Buddy's leash, which is attached to a police harness. He walks him around the classroom, but really, Buddy's leading him to the place where we stash the heroin. Right when he sniffs the filing cabinet, he lays down, indicating this is the spot. A piece of black rubber hose is discreetly thrown over Buddy's head. It's his paycheck for a job well done. Wise will play tug of war with it and let Buddy win. Then he'll hurl the toy back out of sight. Buddy is restrained from going after it.
So he's always assuming his toy's out in the field somewhere. So when we're working, he's looking for this toy again. That's why he's doing what he's doing, for that thing right there. So we're going to hide it from him. It kind of makes him mad a little bit. You know, he's hiding his toy, but we got to keep working.
Wise hopes with Buddy's help, incoming drugs can be kept off the street. They'll start patrolling the airport, commercial barges, and ferry system soon. In Juneau, I'm Elizabeth Jenkins.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org, and you can follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Alexandra Gutierrez, Monica Goki, and Zachariah Hughes in Anchorage, Molly Dishner in Dillingham, and Elizabeth Jenkins in Juneau. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Monica Goki is our web editor, and I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Spenard Builder Supply. For more than 60 years, SBS has helped Alaskans build from ground to roof to everything in between. Spenard Builder Supply is here to build with you.
Baby salmon live here, right in our backyards and neighborhoods. Go out, explore, and take the Baby Salmon Challenge. For more information, go to babysalmon.fish. This announcement is sponsored by the Salmon Project. The Medallion Foundation and the Federal Aviation Administration provide information on passengers' rights and responsibilities. More information at faa.gov/go/flyalaska. This message is sponsored by the Medallion Foundation. The Alaska Department of Education is interested in contracting with three experienced Alaskan educators to help underperforming schools improve instruction and student performance. Apply by July 23rd. Inquire at the Department of Education for information. This message is sponsored by the Alaska Department of Education.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.